Listening Society Podcast.
Welcome to the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society, a podcast dedicated to suspense, crime, and horror stories from the golden age of radio. I'm Eric.
I'm Tim.
And I'm Joshua.
We love mysterious old-time radio stories, but do they stand the test of time? That's what we're here to find out.
This week, I brought an episode from an unusual period in the history of The Whistler. The West Coast production of the series ran on CBS from May 16, 1942 to September 22, 1955.
Many notable actors portrayed the Whistler over the course of that 13-year run, including Joseph Kearns, Gail Gordon, and Bill Johnstone. The longest-serving Whistler and the only actor to receive an on-air credit for the role was popular radio announcer Bill Foreman.
However, from February 3, 1946 to February 9, 1947, WBBM on Chicago produced their own version of the West Coast scripts. These WBBM productions featured Everett Clark as the show's whistling host and were performed before a live audience. CBS agreed to let WBBM produce their own versions only until they were able to find a sponsor for the show outside the Pacific Network. Eventually, Household Finance Company became that sponsor.
After that, WBBM began producing their own horror anthology series featuring Everett Clark entitled The Echo. It only ran for 17 episodes, of which none are known to have survived. Our thanks to Dr. Joe's Classic Radio Workshop for this fascinating bit of history.
Three episodes of WBBM's version of The Whistler are known to still be around, including this one, Blind Impulse, first broadcast December 15th, 1946, in Chicago.
It's late at night, and a chill has set in. You're alone, and the only light you see is coming from an antique radio. Listen to the sounds coming from the speaker, listen to the music, and listen to the voices.
Meisterbrau means the master brew. That whistle is your invitation to another Meisterbrau mystery drama, presented by The Whistler.
I am The Whistler, and I know many things. For I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors which they dare not speak.
Meisterbrau beer, the master brew, served more often in Chicagoland homes than any other beer, brings you another curious story by The Whistler. Tonight, Blind Impulse.
Steve was in his glory. Never in his wildest dreams had he ever believed a thing like this could come to pass. Here they were, just the two of them, at Carol Crandall's special table at the top of the Mark in San Francisco. Through the huge plate glass window, he could see the shining city stretching away to the east, a line of lights marking the Bay Bridge, pointing across the water like an arrow at other sparkling cities at the foot of the hills on the other side of the bay. Everything sparkled. The brilliant room sparkled, and across from him, Carol Crandall sparkled.
What's the matter, Stevie?
Huh?
Not going pensive on me, are you?
Oh, no, just thinking, Carol.
Better watch that. Mother always told me, beware of the man who thinks too much.
It's the music, darling. Always makes me philosophical.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other things.
Ah, other things. Pray go on.
Oh, the night, that beautiful city down there, and you.
Stevie, you read it in a book.
No, no, not at all. Just came to me all of a sudden.
Just like Ronald Coase.
Yeah.
Oh, there's something about you, Stevie. Makes me want to wrap you up and take you home.
Ah, doing your Christmas shopping early.
Exactly.
Excuse me, darling. Don't go away. Be right back.
Be right here.
Pardon me, please. Oh, excuse me. Waiter.
Oh, yes, Mr. Kinsella. The operator's ready with that long-distance call of yours.
Oh, thanks.
You can take the call in the phone booth right over there.
Thank you. I'm sorry, but... Steve Kinsella speaking.
Mr. Kinsella, your call to Juarez is ready. Just one moment, please. Go ahead, please. Hello, Steve.
Millie, how are you, darling? How's it going?
All right, I guess.
Guess? What do you mean, your guess?
It went the way you wanted it to go. I got my divorce without a hitch.
Is it final?
I don't know much Mexican, but it sounded like it.
That's wonderful.
Yes. Isn't it?
You don't sound very happy, Millie.
Should I be?
Oh, please, Millie, let's not go through all that again. It's not forever.
I don't know, Steve. It sounded pretty final.
Will you try and understand, Millie? I love you. I'll never love anyone else. For some crazy reason, this girl thinks I'm wonderful.
Oh, Steve.
Look, darling, her old man's dying in an Arizona sanitarium with over $1 million in the bank. Can I pass up an opportunity like that?
No, I guess you can't.
Well, then.
But no matter how many times you explain it to me, I can't get over the feeling that you're not coming back.
But I am coming back, don't you see? All I need's a year, maybe 6 months.
And you'll divorce her and come back to me.
With half of his estate.
Steve!
Think what it means to us, Millie. The things we can do, the places we can go.
I don't want to think about it.
Now, look, Millie.
I've tried awfully hard. But all I can see is that I'm giving you to another woman.
Millie, please.
That's all, Steve. I don't want to talk about it anymore. You can have your divorce now. You're free to marry her. Go ahead. But please forget all about me. Millie. Will you?
Millie, will you? Hello. Hello, Millie. Oh, for the love of Mike. I'm sorry. Pardon me.
Oh, there you are, darling. Thought you deserted me.
Oh, I'm sorry, Carol.
Meet Lana Turner out there somewhere? I was about to send out the St. Bernard.
Oh, nothing so glamorous, I'm afraid. Just a phone call.
Oh.
Yeah, let's see. Where were we?
You were about to ask me to marry you.
What?
Weren't you?
Well, Carol, I...
Don't be flustered, dear. People get married every day.
Well, I...
You were going to ask me to marry you, weren't you?
What made you think so?
You had that look.
Was it that bad?
I'm an expert, Stevie. I can see it a mile off.
Well, you're certain...
Oh, please don't think I'm vain. It had happened just as often to any girl who was reasonably presentable, who...
Who what?
Had a wealthy father.
I see. But you've decided you love me anyway.
Did I say that?
Didn't you?
No, I didn't say I love you, Stevie. I said I wanted to marry you. There's a difference.
Oh?
You see, I like your looks, and I like the way you wear your dinner clothes. And I like the way you laugh. There are hundreds of things I like about you, and I just think it'd be fun to be married to you.
Is that all?
Isn't that enough?
You're an amazing girl, Carol.
At least I'm honest.
Carol, I don't know what to say.
You love me, don't you?
Of course I do.
Oh, you'll never go to heaven, Stevie.
What do you mean?
You're lying. You think I'm a spoiled little girl who's always had everything she wants.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes, stupid, but covered with money.
Oh, no, wait a minute, Carol.
And you're wrong, Stevie. I'm not stupid. When I met you, I said to myself, looky, Carol, here's a man who wants to marry you for your money.
Carol, listen.
Don't let it worry you for a minute, dear, don't you see? It's not worrying me. Now, let's see. I might possibly marry you tomorrow or the day after at the very latest.
I see.
Any objections?
No.
Good. It's just as I told you, Stevie. I want to wrap you up and take you home.
This may be a rather strange and strained attraction that Carol has for Steve, but we know of one attraction that is perfectly natural, and that is the attraction Golden Good Meisterbrau Beer has for the person who is particular about beer. You see, Meisterbrau beer has been painstakingly brewed for you who demand the best in old-fashioned flavor, in creamy head, in golden body, and in outstanding value. That's why we say that Meisterbrau beer is better in these four ways. Meisterbrau has been specifically brewed that way. Try Golden Meisterbrau beer yourself soon. Enjoy its pleasantly dry and exciting taste. Feast your eyes on Meisterbrau's clear golden color and light but tasteful body. Smack your lips over that rich, creamy head. In short, treat yourself. And we do mean treat yourself to a glass of bubbling, refreshing Meisterbrau beer tonight. You'll find the pleasure is all yours when yours is Meisterbrau beer. Now, back to the Whistler.
So that was it, Steve. No pressure, no persuasion. It was just like falling off a log, wasn't it? And it's all so clear. Nothing can stop it now. Old Simon Crandall, Carol's father, is wasting away in that sanitarium in Arizona with only a few months, maybe weeks, to live. And when he dies, the estate will go not to Carol alone, but to both of you because of the community property laws. All you have to do is be patient, Steve, and hope that Millie will be patient too. That she'll realize that what she told you over the telephone that night was foolish. That she'll decide to wait for you because, in your own way, you do love Millie, don't you? You carried off pretty well during the first part of the honeymoon. Mexico City, Havana, Caracas. And finally, one night about 6 weeks later, the two of you are dressing for dinner in your hotel room in Rio de Janeiro.
Steve, darling, would you mind helping me?
Huh?
The hooks on this dress.
Oh, sure.
Why must they always...
Hold still.
Put them out of reach.
Wait a minute, I'll shoot this thing. Yes, what is it?
Telegram, senor.
Just a minute. There you are, dear. Just a second. Yes?
Telegram, senor.
Oh. Here you are.
Gracias, senor.
What is it, darling?
Cablegram.
Where's it from?
Tucson, Arizona. Probably your father.
You don't suppose...
I don't know. Wait a minute. Think it advisable you return to Tucson immediately. Signed, Whiteside.
His father's doctor. Something's wrong.
Yeah.
Steve.
Huh?
Do you have to look so pleased?
I'm awfully sorry, Mrs. Kinsella. Dr. Whiteside's orders
I insist on seeing him. That's all there is to it.
Be reasonable, Carol.
I don't care. I didn't fly 6,000 miles to be stood up in an anteroom.
Just a minute, Carol. Go ahead, nurse. I'll take care of it.
Yes, sir. He's dying, Steve. They're trying to keep me away.
The doctor has his
reasons. It's been half an hour now. I can't take it much longer.
No, wait a minute. Here, have a cigarette. It'll quiet your nerves. Here. There you are.
I didn't know I'd feel this way.
Well, it had to come sooner or later.
It didn't come too soon for you, did it?
Oh, now, see here.
Funny, isn't it? I knew this was coming. We could all see it months ago. Yet I have to wait until the last moment when it's staring me right in the face to discover that deep inside, I've got a heart after all.
The doctor will see you now.
Oh, thank you.
This way, please.
How do I look, Steve?
Great. Keep your chin up.
I'll try. Here we are. Father!
Well, can't you do better than that, Carol?
Father, you're dressed. Why aren't you in bed?
I've been in bed for 6 months. Got tired of it.
You mean you're well?
Well, I wanted to surprise you, Carol.
Doctor, what's he talking about?
He's sound as a dollar. Gave him his final tests this morning. I'd say if he takes care of himself, he's good for another 20 years, at least.
I thought you were dying.
Carol, well, that's ridiculous.
You see, Simon, I told you we should have made that cablegram plainer.
Oh, I'm sorry, dear. I just wanted to surprise you, that's all.
Oh, Father. You don't know how I feel.
Oh, there, Carol. We're going to forget all about it. We'll go up to the Grand Canyon for a few days, you and I. And Steve. I take it this is Steve.
Oh, yes, Steve.
Hello, Mr. Crandall.
I forgot all about you for a minute. Isn't it wonderful?
Yes, of course it's wonderful. I guess I sort of bowled over. It was such a relief.
Father, you don't know what Stevie went through when we got that cablegram. The poor boy was almost beside himself.
Yes, it was an awful shock, you know.
Here, darling, have a cigarette. It'll quiet your nerves.
The doctor said, 20 years, Steve. Maybe more. You know the whole thing's ridiculous now. A blundering failure. And that Millie is in Los Angeles eating her heart out for nothing. When the three of you arrive at the Altavar Hotel on the rim of the Grand Canyon the next afternoon, you excuse yourself, walk into the telegraph office, and write a wire to Millie.
I've decided you were right. All I want now is out. And only solution is immediate divorce. We'll discuss it with Carol at earliest moment. All my love, Steve.
You tip the clerk an extra dollar to keep it under his hat. Then, because you're desperate for a few hours alone, you spend the rest of the afternoon walking along the rim of the canyon, trying to lose yourself in its breathtaking colors, its blue distances and terrifying depths. So it's almost time for dinner when you arrive back at the hotel room to find Carol waiting for you.
Hello, Carol.
Stevie, have a nice walk?
Wonderful. Where's your father?
Trying to arrange a trip to Phantom Ranch tomorrow morning. When I last saw him, he was about to hit the stableman over the head with a whiffle tree.
Huh.
No trip scheduled tomorrow, and they don't want to let him go down the trail alone. They say it's too dangerous. I left just before the explosion. Dr. Whiteside was right, Stevie. Father's his old self again.
Hmm.
Stevie.
Yes?
Does Millie have more money than I have?
Who said anything about Millie?
She seems to outrank me. Is it her money, or does she have a beautiful soul? You know, you never told me about anyone named Millie.
Where did you find out about her?
This telegram. Came this afternoon after you'd gone.
You opened it?
By mistake, believe it or not. At this point, I'm rather glad I did.
Give it to me. Steve, dear, your wife, your wire was all I needed. Coming at once. Have wonderful news. Hold everything until I arrive. Love, Millie.
Who is she?
It's a long story. I was married to her once.
Before you met me?
That's right.
Oh. You never told me you'd been married before, darling.
You weren't interested at the time.
No, I suppose I wasn't. So you've decided you love her after all, and you want to go back to her now that...
Now that what?
Now that Father's back on his feet.
You're pretty blunt.
You didn't answer my question, Stevie. Do you love her?
Yes.
You always have?
I suppose so.
Well, you don't know how complicated you're making things. What am I supposed to do now?
Divorce me?
Oh?
Let me go back to her?
I hate divorce, Stevie. I always have.
Can you think of a better answer?
I'm afraid there isn't any answer.
You went into this with your eyes open, you know.
The money?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose it should be just as simple to let you go. Well, it's not that simple.
Why not?
You see, I love you.
That's almost funny.
I know it sounds ridiculous.
It is. You're a spoiled little girl, Carol. Always had everything you wanted. You know, it may have been amusing to lean across a dinner table and tell me I was next on your list of trinkets, but it wasn't love. What was it you said? Something about wrapping me up and taking me home. What did you expect?
I'm sorry, Stevie. You know, this is funny. You're the heel, and I'm doing the apologizing.
What?
You were next on my list of trinkets. But I guess the past 6 weeks have made a lot of difference.
I'm sorry.
Thanks. Let it ride for a while, will you? I want to think it over.
All right, Carol.
Of all the incompetent, unreasonable idiots, those birds take the cake. Never heard of anything so fantastic in my life.
What's the matter, Father?
Either refuse to let me go down that trail in the canyon tomorrow. Say I have to wait until Thursday. Make the trip with 30 old maid school teachers and a guide.
Are you going with them?
Not on your life. I've hired a couple of horses for tomorrow morning. Told them we're going somewhere else. We can leave at 5 in the morning and start down the trail before anyone's around to spot us.
We?
Oh, I forgot to mention that, Steve. You're going with me. What time is it, Steve?
7:45. How much farther down to the bottom?
Oh, a couple of miles by the trail. 1,000 feet straight down if you're in an awful hurry. By George, look down there, Steve.
I'd rather not. I don't trust this horse.
Oh, they're used to it. Let him have his head, though, when we get to that narrow stretch down there. Looks like that's that dangerous place the guide was telling me about. Been a few accidents there, it seems.
You'll never know where the idea came from, will you, Steve? You're not even sure it was an idea. It's more of a flash, kind of irresistible impulse. One moment you see him there ahead of you, starting to guide his horse down the dangerous series of switchbacks, where the trail narrows down to almost nothing, and the cliffs drop away sheer for 1,000 feet. The next moment you're moving up on him, your right hand tense, trembling, gripping the long, dangling rein like a whip.
Better watch it here. Pretty narrow. Yeah. Whoa, boy, whoa! Steve! Stop it, Steve! He's falling, Steve! Yeah!
I'm sorry, Ranger. That's all I can tell you.
You say this business of going down that trail without a guide was his own idea?
That's it. The horse stumbled.
Of course he stumbled. That trail's for mules, not horses.
I've got to find my wife, Ranger. Where is she?
She's in her room at the hotel.
Does she know about this?
Yeah, I told her. You'll be available, Mr. Kinsella.
Yes, of course.
Good. I may want you when the authorities get here.
Ranger said he told you about it.
Yes. It was very kind.
Carol, it was awful. One second he was there ahead of me. The next...
I know.
It was my fault, Carol. I should never have let him go.
There was no stopping him ever, once he made up his mind.
Well, I should have gone ahead. It would have been safe. I should have known a balky horse, a rock in the trail.
No, that's not what killed him.
Huh?
I killed him, Steve. In a way. I killed him that night I told you I wanted to wrap you up and take you home. That was the big wrong. To look at it as a lark, to marry a man you knew was after your money and nothing else.
Carol, what are you talking about?
Sit down, Steve.
Well...
Please.
What are you talking about, Carol?
I saw you do it, Steve.
You?
I saw you kill him.
You don't know what you're saying.
There's a public telescope on the point out there. Quite an invention. You can put a dime in it and see your father murdered. The biggest 10 cents worth in history.
Carol!
I was interested in that trip. I wanted to see the two of you together. That's why I went out there alone to that telescope at 8 o'clock this morning. Puts me in a fascinating position, Steve. I was the only one who saw it. Saw you ride up behind him and lift that rein and whip the horse.
All right, Carol. Where do we go from here?
I seem to have two alternatives. I can expose you.
Carol.
Have you charged with murder and put on trial. Oh, yes, I can give the yellow journals a field day with the Crandall case. Spread it all over the country for the next 6 months. Human interest stuff, you know. Playgirl heiress collapses at trial. Money-seeking husband denies murder charge. Reporters, newsreels, people smacking their lips over the scandal. Yes, it'd make a wonderful two-page spread in the National Weekly, wouldn't it?
Please.
But I'd do it, Steve. I'd take all that. If I thought there was a chance in the world you'd be convicted, I'd walk down to that ranger right now and tell him everything. But there isn't a chance, you see. I'd pay the price and I'd get nowhere. Because some brilliant lawmaker at some time or other decided he'd make it illegal for a wife to testify against her husband.
Wait a minute.
I mean, I'm helpless. I'm the only witness, but I can't testify because I'm your wife. So that leaves me the other alternative. To let it lie. Let them decide it was an accident. You win, Steve. Better answer the phone.
Yeah. Hello?
There's a Mrs. Millie Kinsella in the lobby.
Just a minute. It's Millie, Carol.
Send her up. I want to be the first to congratulate her.
The Whistler will return in just a moment. But first, when it's real beer-drinking enjoyment you want, remember, Meisterbrau beer is better four ways. Yes, according to independent research among Meisterbrau beer drinkers, Meisterbrau beer is better four ways. One, better taste. Select seedless hops, perfectly brewed, give Meisterbrau beer a taste mellowed through and through with old-fashioned beer goodness. Two, better head. Carefully balanced carbonation gives Meisterbrau beer a rich, creamy head. A head that stays and stays to the last delicious swallow. Three, better body. Choice ingredients, selected and blended with care, give Meisterbrau beer its full, light body so pleasing to your taste. And four, better value. With a skill equal by none, Meisterbrau's master brewer combines all of these distinctly better things into one great beer to give you better value in beer drinking pleasure. So remember, for real refreshing satisfaction, for beer that's sure to please, insist on Meisterbrau beer, the beer that's better, four ways, always. Now, back to the Whistler.
So there's nothing more to be said, is there, Steve? The two of you, you and Carol, sit quietly in the room at the El Tovar Hotel, waiting for Millie to come up from the lobby. The whole morning has been like something out of a nightmare. The blinding impulse that made you drive Simon Crandall's horse over the cliff. Carol's amazing admission that she saw it all through a public telescope. And her unbelievable decision to let you get by with it, because she knew her testimony wouldn't be accepted under the law. So the money is yours now, Steve. Half of Simon's estate. But somehow it doesn't interest you anymore. A moment later, Millie knocks on the door and you let her in.
Millie!
That's so wonderful, darling. I came just as fast as I could.
Please.
Oh.
Millie, this is Carol.
How do you do? Hello. I've heard a lot about you. I imagine you have.
Millie, Carol has been very reasonable about everything. She's going to give me a divorce.
But that's what I meant in the telegram, darling. You won't have to get a divorce.
What?
The authorities just told me. A Mexican divorce by proxy isn't recognized as legal. So you've been married to me all the time.
Millie.
What did you say? Oh, I know it'll be a little awkward, but you see, legally, you never were his wife.
because he's never really been divorced from me.
Millie, wait a minute.
I'm not his wife, is that it? We were never legally married.
That's right. What's the matter? Did I say something wrong?
No, Millie. Nothing at all. Now I think I'd better leave you two lovebirds alone. I've got a date downstairs with the ranger.
Peter Han Brewery Company of Chicago, brewers of Meisterbrau beer, bring you the strange tales of the Whistler on this station every Sunday night at 9:30. Next week, another exciting story by the Whistler. Tonight's story was produced by Sherman Marks with music conducted by Hunter Kaler. Tonight's production starred Patricia Dunlap as Carol, Ed Prentice as Steve. The part of Millie was played by Josephine Hipple. Bill Green was heard as Simon Crandall. The Whistler is played by Everett Clark. Sound effects by Ed Wojtal and Lou Weir. All characters portrayed in tonight's episode are imaginary, and any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. If you would like to be in the studio audience, address your request for free tickets to radio station WBBM, Department A, Wrigley Building, Chicago 11, Illinois. This is Bob Venables, reminding you that Meisterbrau means the master brew. This program has come to you from our CBS studios in Chicago. This is the WBBM Air Theater, Wrigley Building, Chicago.
That was Blind Impulse from The Whistler here on the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society podcast. Once again, I'm Eric.
I'm Tim. And I'm Joshua.
Whistling. Okay, so I brought this for the first reason is the guarantee that we can all vote that it is historically significant. There's no doubt about that. I just found this little thing that, as we gave credit to Dr. Joe's classic radio workshop, and I came across that. And I was like, wow, that's really fascinating that they were like, okay, we don't have a sponsor. Oh, we really like the show. Can we produce it for a while? Yeah, until we get a sponsor, go ahead. Just do your own in-house in Chicago. That's unheard of.
Yeah.
Kind of trust.
I like, had no idea of this little Whistler like side trip.
Right? Yeah. And then we'll do it live and we'll...
Let's get some beer in here. Right? It's a party.
We have a great following for this show and you're taking a break. So could we do it ourselves so there's no break and we can make that money? In fact, we're going to do it in front of a live audience. That would not happen today.
No.
Nope. And we'll bring in our own actors. All of that. Like, it seems fraught with litigation.
Yes.
But
I wonder if there's some vibe in here of there's lots of Chicago radio and theater talent that as radio gets be a bigger deal, specifically on the coast, that Chicago is losing talent to the coast of we want to do specific Chicago radio, and that the studios on the coast were like, great, generate more talent for us.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I also find it fascinating that they said, okay, can't do it anymore. And they said, yeah, but we just had a lot of fun and made some money, and we're going to write our own thing called The Echo.
Yeah, I wish that we could hear that.
And there's none that exist.
And presumably The Echo is just The Whistler with a different name.
Yeah, but instead of whistling, he's like, welcome, 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 welcome to...
Is this thing on?
For 30 minutes. I really wish. I wonder if there's scripts of that. I would like to at least read a script and see what that show is all about. But I'm sure it was the same premise, right?
Yeah, I'm sure people liked the Whistler, and so they just wanted some kind of mysterious host who brought a crime story every week.
Yeah. I think that their adaptation of the Whistler was spot on.
It's dumb, but I was like, are they just going to get a recording of the original Whistler? Like,
right.
No, they got their own Whistler.
Right.
Did a good job.
I was initially underwhelmed by Everett Clark's Whistler when it started.
Yeah.
I thought it was very straight-laced, kind of seemed more like a maitre d' than a horror host. And so I was like, I'm not sure, but I found it fascinating that as the story progresses, it's very subtle, but he seems to get a little more into it. And he gets a little more of that sinister and gleeful edge. It's small, but it's like he's excited by these doomed characters. Whistler always is. So he won me over in the end.
Here's the other thing about this particular story that I found fascinating that doesn't happen too often, where every single character is unlikable. Like everybody in this, I hate them all. None of them are good people.
Okay, I had a totally different response. I love this script because it's one of the few episodes of The Whistler or this type of story where there's character growth. I think Cynthia is a fantastic character.
I'm just saying that they're all bad people.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
Cynthia,
I would say that at the start.
She's shallow. I don't know if that's bad. She's immature. Growth as she realizes, oh no, now that my father's actually dying, I have real feelings.
Right. Okay. I'll give you that.
I wanted to just toy with you, but
no, I'm actually
in love with you.
Okay.
And even then, when she says, I don't like divorces, at the end of that conversation, when he initially asked for the divorce, she's like, I'll think about it.
Right.
It might have all worked out fine if he hadn't given in to the blind impulse and killed his father-in-law.
Right. But even his wife, who was not his ex-wife, Madge, I don't know.
Millie. Very close.
Yeah, when she came back, whatever. She's unlikable in the sense of she went along on this plot. You know what I mean? She like on board. All right, I'll go get divorced. You marry her. We'll get her money. Now, she was reluctant and she wasn't happy about it, but she still did it. So this is what I'm saying. Like everybody in this has a thread of immorality.
Yeah. There's a little culpability all across the board.
Yeah.
I don't
mind it.
Stories where like, wow, none of you have anything redeeming. I have a tough time with it, which this one. Even their missteps, they give a plausible motivation. Like, I like money.
Right.
Doesn't make me evil.
Right.
I mean, honestly, even before Cynthia had a change of heart, I just was rooting for her out of just sheer honesty.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I did not expect her to be like, I don't love you. You don't love me.
But it'll be fun, and you want my money.
Yeah. Unlike most of these crime stories where there's this doomed relationship, nobody's lying to each other at all, ever, which I thought was a great subtle twist.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That's interesting. They weren't lying to each other.
And even each step, when they start to have a change of heart, they're honest to one another. They have a great marriage. They talk through their feelings as they're having them, even though those feelings are about, you know, waiting for her father to die.
But for me, the best part of this was the telegram that says, and I have good news. Because you spend the rest of the episode going, oh, what's she coming back with, right? Like, she's going to show up with this quote-unquote good news. Mm-hmm. And I know, because we listen to a lot of these, that was an important thing and that was going to be the crux. And when she said, we're not really divorced, I didn't see it coming. I went, oh, no. And what you're hearing the actor do is exactly what's in your head. No, 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 no. No, no, no. Hey, Madge or Millie, whatever you are. Oh, God, that was a great moment. And so I was caught off guard by the twist.
Me too.
I was thrown off by the changes in the law.
Mm.
Because when Cynthia says, I would go right down to that ranger right now and tell him that you murdered my father, except for some brilliant lawmaker decided to make it a law that a woman can't testify against her husband. Yes, they can. They can't be forced against their will. Like, why didn't you do some research, stupid old-time radio show? And then I went, you know what? If there's one thing I've learned in 10 years of doing this podcast is that I, and I think we all do, suffer from that chronological snobbery. And I went, wait, I'm just assuming that people in 1940, whatever, when this is written, were stupid. Maybe I'm stupid and don't know my history. So I was like, maybe that law has changed or morphed. So then, of course, thanks, Eric. I thought, though, with Whistler, this won't be that hard to listen to. I won't get sucked down any rabbit holes. But then, of course, I started doing all this research on spousal immunity and how it has changed.
That's going to come in handy for you.
Yes.
And what did you discover?
That that part of the story is, if it wasn't exactly accurate, it would have felt at least accurate to listeners at that time, because it came from English common law, which originally was just a spousal incompetency, which basically meant they were incapable from an almost spiritual point of view to testify against one another because they were of the same flesh. They were married, right? It had had that religious overtone to it. And so that is what we adopted in this country. And over time, it developed into what it is today, where a spouse can't be forced against their will to testify, but absolutely has the free choice to testify. And there was an in-between period where this episode lands, where it was different patchwork laws on a state level.
State to state.
Yeah. But it also hadn't been codified on a federal level yet. In most states, yes, you couldn't be forced to testify against your husband. But if you chose to testify against your husband or your wife, I'm using husband because that's what's in this episode, the defendant had a veto.
Wow.
Where today, it's like, as long as the spouse is willing to testify, the defendant, the other spouse can't say, no, they can't.
Right.
So that all made a little more sense. Like, she
knows, like, a phone call.
Right.
Obviously, she would know then if she wanted to testify against her husband, he would say no.
Right.
And then my next question was, but wait, why doesn't she just divorce him? And then I'm like, well, that one, I went, okay, wait, when did no-fault divorce start? And obviously after 1946. If he, as the killer of her father, said, no, I'm not going to grant you a divorce, she would have had to show some kind of hardship, and it would have been a long, drawn-out process.
So I took hours of your life sending this as a...
You did, you son of a bitch. However, there's still a weird thing that doesn't work for me, because when they meet with Millie at the end, doesn't Steve say, Cynthia's been very reasonable. She's willing to give us a divorce. And that, from my research, is clear that if you're divorced, there's no immunity whatsoever. The divorced spouse is free to testify just willy-nilly at any trial. Right. Anywhere, just pop in and testify against anybody.
I wonder if he was just trying to talk Millie down.
Yeah. So I think you have to kind of massage that a little bit. Yeah. Then I went down a whole nother rabbit hole, because there's a whole nother area of confidential communications between a husband and a wife. Essentially, like pillow talk. If you're like, roll over and go, I killed your father. That's considered a private conversation between a husband.
A little pillow talk.
And a wife. And that.
Say it faster.
Kill him harder.
Say it in public where it could be used as evidence against you.
Even after you divorce, because that conversation happened in private between a spouse when you were married, that can not necessarily be allowed into evidence. But anyway, that's a whole separate side rabbit hole.
So you went like to Watership Down. Let's talk about the actual episode. I loved the writing of, this is a very simple setup. It's kind of a con to steal this lady's dad's money. And they laid it out gracefully, eloquently, and then just went. And so it was the enjoyment of the characters and the discovery of them that was so delightful. And I felt like they stuck the landing of how to resolve this, the dilemma that was presented at the very top. it's always nice when like the last line of dialogue is the perfect little button that's that.
Sure.
This is the end of the plot. This is the end of the dialogue. Mm-hmm. This is the end of everything. All encapsulated. One little sentence. Mic drop. Bye.
Yep. There's a great moment of production value in this that was stunning to me. And that is in the restaurant, leaves, goes to make a phone call, shuts the phone booth door to silence.
I loved that.
That was a stunning piece of production, putting you in the space, right? Yeah.
Both in the space making like that, but also in the storytelling of big, fun, social thing.
Yep.
I got to have a very private conversation, different world.
But not even a bleed outside the window of the phone booth, just like, whoosh, like,
yeah.
Private. I love that moment. And I thought that was a good paying attention to detail of how effective your Foley and the sound of this can be in putting your listener where you want them to be. That's a manipulation that was really powerful.
This has more twists in it than I'm used to in The Whistler. It usually hangs on one or two. This has four.
Yep.
I think the first, it's a smaller twist, but it's one that delights me. And already mentioned that Cynthia is totally aware you're marrying me for my father's money and doesn't care. I'm like, oh, I'm sitting up a little and I'm listening a little harder now. That's really fun. The second twist is more of a typical Whistler twist that, oh, he's not really sick. He's actually, you know, rested up a little and now he's really healthy. Oh, no. And I really, really like the third twist, which is that she witnessed the murder. And it's not just that she witnessed the murder. Have you guys been to the Grand Canyon?
Yes, that thing exists.
So like anchoring it in those telescopes at the canyon, I could see it. I could imagine her looking through it. And the great line about like, it's great use of a dime to watch my father murdered around. Right. I'm paraphrasing, but it felt really real. I felt like they went and scouted out locations for this radio show.
Reminds me also of that moment of looking through the telescope in North by Northwest.
Yes. And then the Mexican marriage by proxy is the final twist. Yeah. That's a lot of twisting.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Twisting the night away, Whistler.
Before we get the emails, our intro did just say that only one actor was getting credited as the Whistler in the West Coast production. I was writing the intro. I meant to make that clearer. But of course, Chicago, we're going to credit our Whistler.
Thank you. That saves me an angry email I was going to write to you.
He just did while we were sitting here. Dear Tim. Jerk.
So was I the only one who was taken out by that I can't testify against you because I'm your wife?
Nope.
It took me by surprise. And it was close enough to because I did know the thing of you can't compel a spouse to testify against you, that it was close enough in the neighborhood that I was like, oh, that may be true.
My reaction was, oh, you can't compel a spouse to testify against you. It must have been before that you just couldn't. And I just
took their word for it.
I need to be more like you guys. So I'm like, I have to know that this is true.
Right.
Cut to 2 hours later. Oh, it's true.
It was the enjoyment of the twist of it of, like, oh, is she going to turn on him? And then this guy be like, I can't. Mm-hmm. I would, but I can't.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, by the end, I really like her. You've totally realized every mistake you've made. She owns up to it. Mm-hmm. Even in that final monologue, she's like, I was ridiculous. I married you on a lark. And that was me. She recognizes that she is one of the links in the chain that led to her father's death.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or more tragic than usual for the Whistler. To your point, like, it's just a criminal who you hate and you're just love it when they get caught.
Mm-hmm.
Hoisted by their own petard.
Right.
I love a title you can unpack.
Yes.
And this one is like, well, why did you just kick that guy out of that? Why did you feel like I have to marry this lady for a bunch of money? Why did the wife agree to this? Why did the ex-wife agree to this? Like, there's reasons, but a little bit extra thought would have talked you out of this.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is why it was so compelling to see them come to exactly the revelation you're having. Like, just a little extra thought is we actually get to experience them have that just a little extra thought. We're like, this was really stupid.
Right.
Even Steve is like, I love Millie. What am I doing?
Yeah. Right.
It's rare in these crime stories where everyone involved in doing the stupid thing go, you know what? Which is why it has to be a blind impulse, because they all realize this is stupid.
Yeah. So there are a couple things. The worst person, character-wise, in this entire show is Dad's doctor. You gave him weeks, and then went, oopsie, 20 years.
Yeah.
So you're a terrible doctor.
That's an amazing sanitarium.
Second. Yeah, terrible sanitarium. Like, what were you? How is that turnaround possible? What did you have that you went from? Anyway.
And the guy is old enough to be the father of an adult daughter.
Right.
The doctor's saying 20 years. Like, you're going to promise me 20 years?
Right. Do you know who the best actor was in this? I think it's hands down the best actor in this whole show. The guy selling us Meisterbrow. That is a magnificent piece of acting. Meisterbrow is good beer. Yes. This is really tasty. Five times he came up, Meisterbrow. He was amazing.
When they got to the phrase, smacking your lips over the foam.
Over
and
the
then
head.
Later in the actual script, there's some mention of smacking your lips. Like,
have you ever had?
Says, like, I've had some good beers in my time. I've never smacked my lips over.
Here's the reality. Joshua is a beer snob in the sense of he likes really good beer. And I, when I used to drink beer, would drink any. Budweiser was great.
Had a preference for the domestic unfancy.
Well,
if it was
not
cold.
Just that I'm a snob. I'm also not a quitter like Eric.
Right.
I still drink beer.
Right. But, you know.
Got another 20 years of drinking.
If it was cold and in a few minutes, I didn't care what you were saying to me. Did its job, right? That was beer.
Yeah,
I'd done my rounds with Meisterbrau. Mm. Even me, nope. That is a rough drink. That is a tough thing to swallow. That
when you describe it as pleasantly dry and exciting taste,
it's terrible.
These things don't go together.
This is only for Minnesotans, I think, but it ranks up there with Buckhorn.
Oof,
and Buckhorn is. I don't even know
but
what that is.
This is the sponsor,
my dad would say,
that made this show possible.
Yeah.
Until something better came along.
Right. But boy, did he sell that Meisterbrau well. Should we send it to a vote?
Yeah.
Meisterbrau, classic.
I thought it was great. I have never been this engaged with an episode of The Whistler. I think I already described what I loved about it most is just that these characters seemed more authentic and real as people than most episodes of The Whistler, of any episodes of The Whistler that I've ever heard. So I think it's great that this was saved because I'm pretty sure I read that they reuse scripts.
Yes, the West Coast version,
the West Coast version
does
not exist. So they preserved this really fantastic script. Any script that can have me rooting for the criminals by about halfway through is a winner in my book. I also love that it made me stop and think that looking at historical things through the lens of today is sometimes beneficial in terms of horrifically racist things, but you shouldn't let that turn you into, again, this chronological snob where you assume you know more than anyone else who was born before you. So I was happy to go down and do that research for myself as well as for you two lazy bastards.
We count on you.
Occasionally, I'm curious.
Josh will do it.
I did this to myself. But no, I think it stands the test of time. For me, it's a classic episode of The Whistler. It was really engaging. I mean, and even the anomaly, the legal thing that does not stand the test of time that has changed is really fascinating in how it has changed. So it is historically significant, stands the test of time, and also a classic, at least, of The Whistler.
Couldn't agree more. Historically significant, for sure, which is why I brought it. I was bringing it no matter what it sounded like, and I picked this one out of the three. All three of them are pretty good, by the way, that still exist. It is, the production value is really good. I think the acting's really good. I think the storyline, it's a classic piece. It's a really good film noir.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really it's a really good half-hour film noir.
Radio noir.
It was, I like everything about it. It's the best Whistler I've ever heard. And stands the test of time. So, yeah, all of that says I'm not going to give it a classic because there's nothing that stands out about it that says, wow, that changed a perception for me or something I hadn't heard before. It's really good. And I was shocked because no matter what, we were going to listen to one of these.
Yeah.
And it turned out, oh, it's pretty good, too.
I'm going to call this unequivocally classic.
Wow.
This is it's a term I haven't used for a while, but the well-made cheeseburger. Little reference to the menu. I don't know if this is yet again another reference I'm making that is going to...
What's Mortal Kombat?
that's what I wanted. But it is, you know... Now, on paper, a fairly straightforward, this is a romantic crime sort of mystery deal. But in practice, there's lots of delightful flourishes, lots of really, like, the characters and the way they unfold is innovative and exciting. And that works because the mechanics, the engine underneath, is handled so skillfully. The story itself gets told very, very well and clearly. And so you have the room to have all these nice touches.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, a classic. I'm so grateful that this did manage to reach our ears from however long ago and whatever abyss that radio episodes fall into. So yes.
Yay, I'm glad.
Finally, you brought something that doesn't suck. Just thought I'd try to make this negative at the very
end. I happen to know that I'm batting pretty well in the last year.
You have. You've really upped your game. It only took you almost 10 years.
Time to retire.
Tim, tell him stuff.
Please go visit ghoulishdelights.com. That's our home. We live there on the internet. Our episodes live there. You can go there and find all the episodes we've done. And we've done a lot. Other episodes of The Whistler, other things we considered classic, other things we thought were like, no, that's not very good. but we recorded it, so you can listen to it. And you'll also find there links to our merchandise store. You can go buy some merchandise things with our logo on it so you can tell the world, hey, I know these guys. This is what their logo looks like. We would appreciate it. And you'll also find a link to our Patreon page.
Yes, go to patreon.com/themorals and support this. Tim is making noise in the background and distracting me. This was my best Patreon pitch ever. Now I'm totally off my game. So just go to patreon.com/themorals. Give us money. Also, I just realized it's been many years since we have circled back and told people to leave us a review on iTunes. Now, for the first time in like 6 years, I went to iTunes and looked at reviews. We're still doing really well.
We scrutinize it all the time. We see it immediately.
Hey, the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society Theater Company does...
Leave a comment. We will never read it.
We do live onstage audio drama recreations of classic old-time radio and a lot of our own original work. To find out where we're performing, what, and how to get tickets, go to ghoulishdelights.com. We perform a lot. We'd love to see you there. If you can't make it, being a Patreon gets you the audio recordings of those live performances. And that's another perk. What's coming up next?
Next, we'll be listening to Tim's choice, House of Fear from Rogue's Gallery. Until then...
Look out!
Look, you can keep this in. If I didn't know what Watership Down was, and I wanted to watch a movie Easter morning.
Oh, no.
a few months ago. And this cartoon, Watership Down. And I am 60 years old. And it devastated. No one warned me. My wife walked by, what are you watching? Watership Down. She did go, what?
Well, I got to go.
But I thought it'd be a fun little cartoon movie. Nope, that's a lot of dead bunnies. So anyway, that's a sidetrack. I learned the hard way what Watership Down is about. My God.